Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team, led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hey everybody, welcome to Just for Variety. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. On today's episode, I'm chatting with Robin Wright about her feature film directorial debut, Land, a movie about a woman who moves to a secluded cabin after suffering a horrible tragedy. Wright also stars in the film, but tells me that wasn't the original plan. Find out why she ended up in front of the camera as well as behind it. Then later, Wright's co-star, Damien Bashir. The Oscar-nominated actor reveals that making Land helped him heal after suffering a personal hardship. Plus, he teases his work in the upcoming Godzilla vs. Kong. So stick around. I'll have Robin Wright coming up after this short break. Welcome back to Just for Variety. Robin Wright makes her feature film directorial debut with Land. She also stars in the film as a woman who tries to escape everyday life by moving to a remote cabin on the side of a mountain after suffering a horrible loss. Shortly after her move, she is befriended by a stranger named Miguel, played by Damien Bashir. I talked to Wright via Zoom. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. How's it going publicizing your feature film debut via Zoom? How has that been?
It's going. Have you been doing this all day, every day, too?
I've been doing this since March. And I love seeing you. I love seeing everyone. Wow. But it's just, that's all I do is Zoom.
It's so different, isn't it?
All I keep thinking is I wish I would have invested in Zoom back in the day. Who knew?
I hear you.
Did you actually have to do post work on the film via Zoom, or were you?
We did all of it remotely. Yeah.
Whoa! What was that like?
Different. You know, where you're like, you're trying to watch a cut of the film, or you're trying to listen to a quick time of the composer's music, and then internet just goes brack. But you know, we're all experiencing these technical difficulties right now.
And you make your feature film debut with a film about a woman who completely disconnects. Like, she probably wouldn't even know if there was a pandemic going on.
Exactly.
So tell me, how did this script come to you? It's really a gorgeous film. It's really beautiful. You did such an amazing job.
Thank you so much. I just felt it was so poignant when I first read it almost now 3 years ago, because we were all experiencing in different ways the amount of tragedy that was going on around the world, and the random shootings that were occurring almost biweekly, and then all the mean and encouragement to be mean over the last 4 years, the Twitter of it all, and this movie just was so beautiful about human kindness. And yes, you're going on a journey with a woman who has experienced an unfathomable event in her life that has changed her life forever, and she decides to go off the grid. And it's about being saved by somebody else. Mm-hmm. And then finding a renewed sense of hope in a new life. And I just felt like that message really needed to be re-reminded of.
Why this your feature film debut? I imagine other scripts came your way or other films that you've thought about. Why was this the one?
For that very reason. I just thought the world needs more messages of kindness, and that, you know, newfound faith that we're going to be okay, we're going to get through this, and you generally get through difficult times with the kindness and the compassion of another human being. And that's who Miguel is in this story. And I love that one line. It's what made me want to do it, when she says, "Why are you helping me?" And he says, "Because you were in my path." And I think that's the beauty of humanity, is we do need each other and we do help each other. And you don't have to know one another to care for someone, help someone out of their adversity.
It's true. My husband and I were watching it, and when he said that line, we both sort of looked at each other and were like, that's what it's about. It's about giving back and not doing it out of ego or doing it out of wanting a claim for it. It's just, why is it so hard for us to appreciate one human being helping another human being?
And it happens so frequently. Mm. And every time we read about a story like that, you know, where a stranger helps someone on the street, like I've been following on Instagram this good news movement, because it just makes you feel so good. I'm crying every day when people are so beautiful, when they're beautiful. Mm. And I think it's a really important, empowering message in this film.
So take me back to, obviously you've directed before, but this is your film. The night before you're going to first day of production, one, did you sleep? Two, what were you feeling like?
You never sleep the night before. You never sleep. You know, it's always those jittery beginnings where you think, okay, am I going to be able to accomplish everything that I have envisioned in my head for, you know, 2.5 years talking about this movie and having had an incredible amount of prep discussion? What do we want it to look like? What do we want? It's a 3-act play, basically. This is, you know, going through grief, being rescued, and then a resurrection almost into a new person. Mm-hmm. And I just think I was hoping that people would walk away with this idea of, I prefer that message versus the dark, ugly, mean message. And I just wanted to make sure that I could convey that. So I was very worried that I wasn't going to be able to convey that deeply enough. That was my fear.
Was it a hard movie to sell because it is about people helping each other and not explosions, not something that just takes on, I mean, it's based on tragedy, but you don't see the tragedy, you feel it. Was it a hard sell to say, hey, this is a movie about a man helping a woman he doesn't know?
You know, I wonder if that's why it was difficult in the beginning. We couldn't really figure it out, because we would pitch it and we would share with them how empowering and enlightened the end is and how optimistic the end is. And maybe it was because it was a woman, just a woman's story. Mm-hmm. And people weren't in the market for that at the time. And then Focus Features was our last meeting when we were in Cannes, doing our sales pitch, you know, one after the other. And they sat down and they just said, we completely resonate with the story and the message of this film, and we'd love to get behind you and be your distributor. And we were like, yes, they get it.
What's it like going on those sales meetings, those pitch meetings? Is it completely nerve-wracking?
You're basically, I mean, it's like what we're doing now. You know, you say the same thing over and over and over again. It's like selling a used car. You just keep on talking about it.
And then you have Damien Bashir, who's one of my absolute favorites. My husband's Mexican. One of the first times I took my husband to an event was to the DVD release of, and right now I'm forgetting the movie. What is the movie that he was nominated for an Oscar?
A Better Life.
Thank you. I took my husband to like the DVD release party and introduced him to Damien Bashir. And I didn't know how big he was in Mexico. but huge. I said, call the family, call my mother-in-law right now. Tell her I just introduced you to Damien Bashir. He's wonderful.
He is such a special soul.
Mm.
And you see that in his work, of course. And then after I saw him in Hateful Eight and how mm-hmm. funny he was.
Mm-hmm.
And Miguel, this character, we had added some comedy for him.
Mm.
And I thought, what perfect casting. And I didn't know if I would get him. And he walked into my house for the first meeting. And he said, I have to do your movie. I need to do it. And I said, well, good, because I need you. And we it was like we had known each other our whole lives. That chemistry you see on screen, that bond of just pals, is exactly what it felt like the minute he walked in my house.
And I love the fact that the story did not turn romantic.
Right?
That it didn't, because, listen, I'm first watching, I'm like, are they gonna, are they not? Are they? And then I was like, I'm so happy it didn't go there, because I could see so many studios saying, well, you know, at some point. Was that a very, very conscious make, you know, it doesn't turn into sort of a trope of a woman needs help, the man comes and saves her, and they fall in love?
It was in the original script that I read almost 3 years ago. That's what I loved about it, that they form this beautiful platonic bond. And they give each other a gift of redemption.
Mm. How hard was it? And I'll preface all of my interviews with, there are some spoilers. How hard was it to do that scene when he is on his deathbed? That was just, oof.
It was real, I have to say. That was the last scene that we shot on our movie schedule. So the end of the movie, we got to shoot our last day.
Wow.
And so it was very emotional anyway and melancholic, because we were saying goodbye to everyone and saying goodbye to Miguel in that way. I think it was just all very compounded by, wow, we have been on this mountain, all of us together, for a month. And it was a beast to shoot the movie, and everyone did such an incredible job, so hardworking. And, you know, the floodgates just open when you're like, oh my God, we're done. So it kind of came naturally for both of us, I think. We were going to miss each other. I told him I was going to miss my mountain friend.
You said the movie was a beast. Let's talk about some of the beasts in the movie. Bears, squirrels.
Squirrels are such beasts.
Listen, I'm a city boy. I don't like squirrels.
Well, let me tell you, Bobby Bukowski, our DP, chose to sleep in Edie's cabin most of the shoot so that he could grasp and capture everything and anything nature brought him. He would just pick up that camera and shoot.
Wow.
And he would say things the next day like, well, me and my friend, you know, we got this beautiful sunrise shot this morning, gorgeous peaks. And I kept saying to our producer, who's the friend? I don't remember seeing a friend. Was a friend here last night? The friend was his squirrel friend that got into the cabin and was his bed partner. That was his mountain friend. Yep, we were living the movie we shot, for sure.
Nope. Don't want a squirrel friend anywhere near my bed. Never. Wow. What was it like being
squirrel friend?
What was it like being up on that mountain? Because you're not only, again, I imagine it wasn't very conducive to, like, if you lost electricity, where do you get? Like, how close were you to civilization?
We were very far away from civilization. Meaning if your generator broke down,
right,
that was not good. We were 8,000 feet up and dealing with the wicked and unpredictable weather patterns that Alberta, Canada delivers. It was definitely challenging, but so worth it because it's so authentic. It's like what you see, we were there. So when you open that cabin door, there was the snow and the sleet and the rain and the animals. And, you know, it was It was very therapeutic, A, and help you get into the part so easily. Being immersed and communing with nature and staying there, like sleeping in our trailers at night and being able to wake up to the quiet and the birds and then hearing the wind blow in the aspen trees instead of waking up in the city and hearing honking horns and reversing trucks, beep, beep, beep. You know, we were in nature. So it, I think it helped everybody. It helped all the departments really make an authentic film of what it is like to live in the wilderness.
You said it was therapeutic. In what way? Tell me about that.
I just think you didn't have very good cell coverage up there, so there wasn't a lot of emailing capability or phone calls. And I loved disconnecting from those devices. And I didn't really have a choice. And it's very liberating because you do get to sit with yourself and slow your mind down a little bit because we're just always going, always thinking, right? Spinning, spinning, spinning. And that is the therapy of it. It just makes you more meditative and you start looking at things more instead of looking and typing at things more.
So what kind of director are you? Are there directors that you would do something and be like, you know what? I learned that from this director that time I was on this film, or you know, I was doing House of Cards. I got it from that director. What kind of director are you?
I don't know yet, but I'm going to have to get a couple more under the belt to really know. Like on House of Cards, that was very different because we had a style we had to adhere to.
Right.
And this one, I had more freedom to move the camera, use handheld, use different lenses, really get in there, get inside the character's space, really feel like you're on a journey with this character. And I got a lot from Anthony Minghella, I have to say. He was such a beautiful storyteller, and he would literally tell stories instead of giving you an adjective as a direction. He wouldn't just give you a one word. And I loved the way he allowed the actor to translate that story into the exact tempo that he wanted out of that take. And to watch the evolution of an actor do something like that from a story was just fascinating. And I wanted to steal that technique.
Was there a part of you that said, you know what, for this, maybe I shouldn't star in the movie. Like, let's take one thing at a time. Why producer, director, star? Why do it all?
Well, it was never the intention for me to be in it. We had a time crunch. You know, we got financed and we had this really slim window in which we had to get it cast and get up on that mountain and start prepping. Because we had to get four seasons in 29 days. So we could not miss that window. And the producers were basically like, we don't have a choice to wait to see if we get a response. So Robin, I think you're going to have to just be in it. And I literally said, well, I'm going to be there anyway. So, okay.
So talk about directing yourself, because obviously there are a lot of scenes. It's just you. It's just you, no dialogue, in your head, in your physical, a lot suffering. How do you, I guess, do you stop yourself and start talking to yourself? Like, how do you?
Yes, when you're bad, you stop yourself and you say bad, bad, no. Do it right. And then, you know, you also have the help of your, I had an incredible team of three female producers that were in the dit tent watching playback all the time. So they were my co-director. They'd be like, that was terrible. Do it again. Thank God I had them, because you can't do it on your own. Right. You do always have that intrinsic knowingness when you nailed a take or it's good enough because you know you're going to be able to cut to that angle. But having that backup and those other eyes on your performance was very beneficial.
So what's your next film you're going to direct?
Film, I don't know, but I'm going to go direct a couple of episodes of Ozark in a couple of months, and I cannot wait. I love that show.
Wow, that's a good one. That's a dark one.
It's a goodie. Dark. It's really dark. I'm used to that after House of Cards. You know what I mean? This is not
very
true.
Yes. But last season of Ozark, I was just like...
Right?
So when do you start figuring out what the next film is going to be, though?
Starting to read stuff now. It'd be nice to do a comedy. I think maybe laughing for all of the people, for the viewers. We want more laughing. We need to laugh some more. Right. It's been a tough year.
No mountaintop rom-coms. Put them in the city. Real easy. Don't have to worry about the generator.
Nope. We're plugging in. Plugging into the wall.
How are you feeling about now that, you know, obviously there's a pandemic, but there's a certain person who's no longer in the White House? And you talked about how, like, we were in this world of just being mean and mean. Are you hopeful?
I am nothing but hopeful, because we have to be, you know, we have to be. And I do think things are going to get better without question. That was a long 4 years.
And now my fun question for you, what's the craziest or most memorable audition you ever had?
I can't even share that.
Yes, you can.
No way. It's so bad.
That is so mean to do to me right
no
now.
No way.
That is so mean.
I would be throwing people under the bus, and I'm not going to do that. It was just...
Don't name names.
I can't even minimize it for you. Just in a nutshell, it's like when you go in and you think, okay, well, I don't have to do all the stage direction, right?
Right.
I'm just going to read the dialogue. And this other craftsman, thespian, doing the scene with, decided to do all of the stage direction. And it was, let's just put the word out there, it was kind of physically abusive. And I was so young, I was like, I didn't think we had to do that part of the scene for the audition. Like, if you get the movie, then that's when the stunt people come in and do that kind of stuff. Yeah, well, I guess we were doing it for real. So I got a real taste of method acting, if you know what I mean.
Did you get the part?
No, and on top of that, I didn't get the part.
Robin, thank you for this. It's always good seeing you. Congratulations. Like I said, it's such a beautiful film. Just, it's very
thank
meditative.
You so much.
And like you said, it's therapeutic. You were making it. It's almost therapeutic watching it too. I really do believe that.
Oh, bless you. Thank you so much for watching.
And have fun on Ozark.
I will. Good talking to you, Mark.
Same here.
Bye.
Thanks. That was Robin Wright. I'm going to take a short break, but when I return, I'm talking to Wright's co-star, Damien Bashir. Welcome back to Just for Variety. In Land, Damien Bashir plays Miguel, a mysterious stranger who comes to the aid of a woman played by Robin Wright while she's living in a remote cabin on the side of a mountain. Bashir was also recently seen in George Clooney's The Midnight Sky. Coming up next for the Oscar-nominated actor is Godzilla vs. Kong. Here's Damien Bashir. So let's talk about Land. It's a beautiful movie, just so moving. The performances from you and Robin are just so emotional, and there's not even that much dialogue. It's just, you guys really just say it all in your faces. And Robin told me, I talked to her last week, and she said that you walked in and you said, I need to play Miguel. I'm going to play Miguel. Why is that? Why were you so passionate?
Well, thank you for your words, you know, because I agree. The process of entering a film has like many faces. The very first one is when you read the material, right? And so I always think of me as a reader first. So if it captures me, if it traps me, you know, the story, regardless of whatever character they're offering me, I have to be trapped by the story. And then if I'm lucky, I will find a juicy, beautiful character. And the most important part of this is the human experience. Who is making this film? You know, why are we making this film? Mm-hmm. And when I heard that this came from Robin, I was already excited just to meet her. I was already happy just to have that chance, you know, to sit down and talk to this lady whom, you know, I've admired for so many years. And I remember when I read the script, it was so powerful, and it talked to me right away. And I felt the need to do it because of the times we live in, not only as a society in the United States, but as humans in the planet, you know, in the same boat. I felt that that's exactly what we're lacking of, you know, generosity and empathy. Empathy, generosity, caring for each other, and this is a film about resilience, and that's who we are. We as human beings are resilient, and I am, you know, I come from a really, really strong group of resilient human beings. Mm-hmm. You see, every time we talk about this journey of leaving your home and leaving everything behind, you know, your culture, your language, your food, your friends, everything, life as you know it. Just think about this. You move into a different planet. You just go into a spaceship, boom, go out there. And it's a very risky type of trip, right? It's a very risky journey. And I compare that to going out there into space because it has the same risks involved. And many people, many of our, you know, my fellow country women and men from Latin America, not only Mexico, they take that risk. And they risk their lives, and many of them don't make it. So it is that heavy. It is that serious. And we are resilient. You know, we overcome any type of obstacles with only one thing in mind, you know, achieving our dreams and getting a better life for our families, you know, and for humanity. Because I always thought that whatever you do, whatever great things happen to you, if they're not good for more people, more human beings, then it's not really good. Mm. Whatever you do that is great, whatever, you know, gift you get from life, if you can extend that to other people, that's when it really matters. You know, that's when it really, really resonates. And that's what happened to me. You know, when I read this script, it resonated right away to me. You know, it was, I just felt that I needed to do this film. And yes, that's what I told Robin. As soon as she opened the door, you know, she smiled. With that smile, it's like, hello, one second, let me get my sunglasses, man. Wow. So much light coming from this human, you know. And it was an instant connection. Many casting directors and directors and producers, they don't know that when you go to a meeting, you're also seeing, you know, they're of course, you know, they want to make sure that you're right for the part, but you want to make sure also that that's going to be a great connection, you know, that whatever we're going to create, it's going to be a fantastic journey. And that's what it was, you know. And I was going through a very, very heavy personal journey myself, and this is very, very strange how, you know, your fellow peers, in this case Robin, without even knowing, you know, each other, she puts Miguel in my hands, And it becomes a fantastic opportunity for me as an actor to explore different things that I haven't tried before. But at the same time, it helped me on my own personal journey. And it was through facing what Miguel goes through that helped me in the process of healing. And just being up there in those beautiful mountains, you know, oh my God. You know, nature has that power. It has, you know, healing properties. Whether you stand in front of a beautiful ocean or just, you know, on an empty beach or go up in the mountains or, you know, stare up. Just look at the sky, you know, look at the stars. It heals you right away, you know. So, yeah, sorry for the long explanation of
it's wonderful. No, that's, listen, it's better than you just saying, like, because I wanted to work with her.
Yeah, right, exactly. Because, look, when you say that the characters speak very little, and Miguel is very, extremely frugal, you know, in words and actions and emotions and all that. So that alone was a challenge, as you can see. You know, keep it calm and keep it quiet and keep it cool, you know what I mean? And Robin and I laugh all the time about that, you know, because this is a real creation of a character, you know what I mean? Keeping these guys still.
You say that Miguel helped you get through your, you know, some personal stuff. How does a character, is it the acting that helps? Is it the actual character? What is it that helps the healing process in terms of you committing to your art, but also bringing your personal life into it? Does that make sense?
It makes all the sense, man. It's a wonderful question because I often wonder when that happens. You know, in what part of the process that happens, we experience that, because preparing for a role, you know, trying to learn everything you need to know about your character and building a character is one of the loneliest process mm-hmm. in any artistic, you know, manifestation, in any work of art. I think it's similar to writers and painters. It's a very, very lonely moment. All this process where you are alone with, you know, the paper and trying to figure out who this man is and, you know, what his motives are and how he walks, how he looks like, how he feels, why, you know, he says what he says and does what he does and et cetera, et cetera. So I always believe that I'm a better actor every time I finish shooting a film. After going through the whole process, I feel like I'm a better human being. I feel like I'm a better actor. I feel like I know more, you know what I mean? And this is the first time that, you know, through your question, I'm wondering when that happens, how you actually learn and how you get healed. I think it's a combination of factors, you know. It starts when, you know, with the connection with your director, because whatever you see on the screen is an agreement between your director and whatever you bring to the table. And Miguel has many similarities with my own personal journey. We as humans will experience a loss of a loved one at some point in our lives, you know. That's something that it will happen, yes or yes. That's the only thing that it's, you know, a fact, that it's sure and it will happen. So Miguel goes through that the same way I was going through, the same sorrow and grief, and I think that healing process began there, you know, when I was trying to find that connection with Miguel and what we had in common. And then, of course, as soon as we arrived in Calgary and went up that beautiful mountain in Alberta in Canada, I remember the effect that Harry and me, you know, the first time we drove up, when we drove up, you know, it's like a 1.5 hours journey all the way from, you know, downtown Calgary all the way to the top of the mountain where we were. I remember feeling like a gentle touch on my back. You know, like everything's gonna be fine. I remember staring at that view, staring at that, you know, at those mountains in front of us. And I remember feeling that. So I guess that's when it hit. And then after, you know, the whole process, because every day was the same beauty, I mean, the same experience, you know, I would drive all the way up 1.5 hours every morning at dark. And that's when the whole thing will begin. It didn't begin when they say action.
On the fun side, how many animals did you have run-ins with?
Oh, Lord. You know, that is something that's really, really cool, that ever since I lived in Los Angeles, I always encounter, you know, all the way, all kinds of creatures, you know, from dinosaurs to from raccoons, deers, of course, and like coyotes, yeah. All kinds of squirrels, you know, rats. You know, very friendly rats, not like the rats in, you know, big cities like Mexico City or New York. Those guys, they have knives, my friend. I've seen
rats. Yeah, those are not friendly.
I've seen rats with guns in the subway. But anyway, these guys are, you know, friendly, and they're so cute. And I have this very tall pine outside. You know, it's my neighbor's pine, and all the way in the top. There's always a falcon, and sometimes there are two. And then one morning, an eagle crashed against the window, and she survived, of course, but all kinds of creatures. But anyway, you know, back in those mountains, we saw bears, we saw, of course, squirrels and hares, you know, rabbits and all kinds of things. But watching a bear in the wild, that to me was the highlight of that experience, because although, you know, you keep a, you know, safe distance, and there's a bear wrangler, bear whisperer with us. And, but it's such a powerful thing, because the bear looks at you. And when you lock eyes with a wild animal, it's pretty powerful.
Speaking of big animals, Godzilla versus Kong.
You know, one of the beauties of our work is that we get to go into all kinds of different directions, you know what I mean? And I love experimenting or exploring, you know, new genres and new, you know, types of films and, of course, you know, different budgets.
Right.
But it's just fascinating the way, you know, the things they can do nowadays, because I grew up watching those films, but I remember, you know, when Kong moved like in a very weird way. But what you see now is just, oh my goodness, technically superb. Oh my goodness. So I saw the film. It's just, you know, colossal. This is wonderful. This is really, it's a beautiful thing to watch. And I had a lot of fun, you know, and everybody, all of the you know, actors, my producers and my director, they were all really, really cool. And we had so much fun doing that film. But you see, we made those films like way back, and now they're all coming out, you know, at the same time. So it seems like I should have filmed every weekend, right? it only seems that way, but no, it doesn't happen that way.
How do you think under the new administration, the U.S.'s relationship with Mexico will change?
The relationship with the world would change, you know, with everybody and everything. It was just incredible the level of stupidity that we reached over the last 4 years, you know, in every sense, you know, and look. My deepest respects for millions of Americans who voted for that guy, because they were lied to all the way. And those people are a key part of this country too. You know what I mean? So I think the biggest challenge now is unite this country as well as in Mexico. We're working, you know, on that as we speak, because in Mexico has been divided also throughout the last decades. And we're trying to put the pieces together, and it's a difficult task, you know what I mean? So hopefully the relationship between Mexico and the US will be way better and easier, more humane. I think decency is a good start, but there's so many things to do. You know, there's so many things pending. There's an urgency for an immigration reform, a comprehensive immigration reform. You know, we need a new amnesty. It's urgent to have it. The last one was from the Ronald Reagan's days back in 85. I'm the result of that amnesty. When I arrived in New York, it was that long. And so we need to take those kids out of those cages. You know, that's one of the first things they have to do. I hope they're working on that, because it's so shameful, you know, and many other things, many, many other things. There's a long list of things that we have to take care of in terms of equality and stop racism and stop nonsense.
How hard was it to hear, you know, for the last 5, 4, 6 years, that racist rhetoric? Or is there a chance I doubt you become numb to it, but it almost became like it was just happening all the time.
Yeah, you know, it's too much, you know, it's enough is enough. And you'd be surprised how that happens everywhere in the world. You know, I'm a big soccer fan. I love football from around the world. So I follow many different leagues, you know, from Germany all the way to Spain, the United Kingdom, and the Premier League, they call it, and La Liga in España. And there's a strong movement against racism. You know, it's an illness that is everywhere, you know, and but the levels that we reach in this country in terms of racism, it's just too much. You know what I mean? That needs to stop now. It's been 400 years. That's too much. That's enough. And if you don't get insulted because you're not black, then you're not human. You know what I mean? So I take it very personally when that happens. When that happens to, you know, the African-American community, or what they do to our kids and they put them in cages, you know what I mean? So that's what I'm saying, that there's so many things pending that need to be solved. But that you know, the racism is just it's shameful. To me, there's only one race, you know, the human race. And when we understand that, we will be able to go to the next level. You know, to become real humans, you know, that's exactly the difference between us and hyenas.
That was Damien Bashir. Now let's go into the pages of Variety's new Our Town section, where the magazine once again is running engagement announcements. On the top of the list this week, Paris Hilton. The hotel heiress and former reality star got engaged just before Valentine's Day to boyfriend, venture capitalist Carter Roone. Hilton posted a video of her and her husband-to-be on Instagram with a caption reading in part, "When you find your soulmate, you don't just know it, you feel it." Congrats to the lovebirds. For more engagement, wedding, and baby news, check out Our Town in this week's Variety. Well, that's it for this week's episode of Just for Variety. I'll be back soon, but until then, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Mark Malkin. Also, let me know what you think of the podcast, what you've read in my column, and what you'd like more of. Until next time, stay safe and be well. And please keep wearing those masks.